Chapter 3. Sharker and I were drinking sugar cane sangria, which she made in the most excellent manner I found, that her Christian name was Isabella, which they shortened into Belle, and that the name of the deceased non-commissioned officer was Todd. Being the kind of neat little woman it was natural to make a toy of, I never saw a woman so like a toy in my life. She had got the plaything name of Belted. In short, she had no other name on the island. Even Mr. Commissioner Portage, and he was a grave one, formally addressed her as Mrs. Belted, but I shall come to Mr. Commissioner Portage presently. The name of the captain of the sloop was Captain Marion, and therefore it was no news to hear from Mrs. Belted that his sister, the beautiful unmarried young English lady, was Miss Marion. The novelty was that her Christian name was Marion too. Marion, Marion. Many a time I have run off those two names in my thoughts, like a bit of verse. Oh, many, and many, and many a time. We saw out all the drink that was produced, like good men and true, and then took our leaves, and went down to the beach. The weather was beautiful, the wind steady, low, and gentle, the island, a picture, the sea, a picture, the sky, a picture. In that country there are two rainy seasons in the year. One sets in at about our English midsummer, the other, about a fortnight after our English Michaelmas. It was the beginning of August at that time. The first of these rainy seasons was well over, and everything was in its most beautiful growth, and had its loveliest look upon it. They enjoy themselves here, I says to Charker, turning surly again. This is better than private soldiering. We had come down to the beach to be friendly with the boat's crew who were camped and hutted there, and we were approaching towards their quarters over the sand, when Christian George King comes up from the landing place at a wolf's trot, crying, "Yup, so jeer," which was that Sambo pilot's barbarous way of saying, "Hallo, soldier." I have stated myself to be a man of no learning, and, if I entertain prejudices, I hope allowance may be made. I will now confess to one. It may be a right one, or it may be a wrong one, but I never did like natives, except in the form of oysters. So, when Christian George King, who was individually unpleasant to me besides, comes a-trotting along the sand, clucking, "Yup, so jeer," I had a thundering good mind to let fly at him with my right. I certainly should have done it, but that it would have exposed me to reprimand. "Yup, so jeer," says he. "Bad job." "What do you mean?" says one. "Yup, so jeer," says he, "shipleaky." "Shipleaky?" says one. "Is," says he, with a nod that looked as if it was jerked out of him by a most violent hiccup, which is the way with those savages. I cast my eyes at Charker, and we both heard the pumps going aboard the sloop, and saw the signal run up, "Come on board. Hands wanted from the shore." In no time some of the sloop's liberty men were already running down to the water's edge, and the party of seamen, under orders against the pirates, were putting off to the Columbus in two boats. "Oh, Christian George King, sar berry sorry," says that Sambo vagabond then. Christian George King cry, English fashion. His English fashion of crying was to screw his black knuckles into his eyes, howl like a dog, and roll himself on his back on the sand. It was trying not to kick him, but I gave Charker the word, "Double quick, Harry," and we got down to the water's edge, and got on board the sloop. By some means or other, she had sprung such a leak that no pumping would keep her free. And what between the two fears, that she would go down in the harbor, and that, even if she did not, all the supplies she had brought for the little colony would be destroyed by the sea water as it rose in her, there was great confusion. In the midst of it, Captain Marion was heard hailing from the beach. He had been carried down in his hammock, and looked very bad, but he insisted on being stood there on his feet, and I saw him, myself, come off in the boat, sitting upright in the stern sheets, as if nothing was wrong with him. A quick sort of council was held, and Captain Marion soon resolved that we must all fall to work to get the cargo out, and that when that was done, the guns and heavy matters must be got out, and that the sloop must be hauled ashore, and careened, and the leak stopped. We were all mustered, the pirate chase party volunteering, and told off in two parties, with so many hours of spell, and so many hours of relief, and we all went at it with a will. Christian George King was entered one of the party in which I worked, at his own request, and he went at it with as good a will as any of the rest. He went at it with so much hardiness, to say the truth, that he rose in my good opinion almost as fast as the water rose in the ship, which was fast enough, and faster. Mr. Commissioner Portage kept in a red and black japan box, like a family lump sugar box, some document or other, which some Sambo chief or other had got drunk, and spilt some ink over as well as I could understand the matter, and by that means, had given up lawful possession of the island. Through having hold of this box, Mr. Portage got his title of commissioner. He was styled consul too, and spoke of himself as government. He was a stiff-jointed, high-nosed old gentleman, without an ounce of fat on him, of a very angry temper and a very yellow complexion. Mrs. Commissioner Portage, making allowance for difference of sex, was much the same. Mr. Kitten, a small, youngish, bald, botanical and mineralogical gentleman, also connected with the mine, but everybody there was that, more or less was sometimes called by Mr. Commissioner Portage, his vice commissioner, and sometimes his deputy consul. Or sometimes he spoke of Mr. Kitten, merely as being under government. The beach was beginning to be a lively scene with the preparations for careening the sloop, and with cargo, and spars, and rigging, and water casks, dotted about it, and with temporary quarters for the men rising up there out of such sails, and odds and ends as could be best set on one side to make them, when Mr. Commissioner Portage comes down in a high fluster, and asks for Captain Marion. The captain, ill as he was slung in his hammock betwixt two trees, that he might direct, and he raised his head, and answered for himself. "Captain Marion," cries Mr. Commissioner Portage, "this is not official. This is not regular." "Sir," says the captain, "it hath been arranged with the clerk and supercargo, that you should be communicated with, and requested to render any little assistance that may lie in your power. I am quite certain that hath been duly done." "Captain Marion," replied Mr. Commissioner Portage, "there hath been no written correspondence. No documents have passed, no memoranda have been made, no minutes have been made, no entries and counter-entries appear in the official muniments. This is indecent. I call upon you, sir, to desist until all is regular, or government will take this up." "Sir," says Captain Marion, chafing a little, as he looked out of his hammock, "between the chances of government taking this up, and my ship taking herself down, I much prefer to trust myself to the former." "You do, sir?" cries Mr. Commissioner Portage. "I do, sir," says Captain Marion, lying down again. "Then, Mr. Kitten," says the commissioner, "send up instantly for my diplomatic coat." He was dressed in a linen suit at that moment, but Mr. Kitten started off himself and brought down the diplomatic coat, which was a blue cloth one, gold laced, and with a crown on the button. "Now, Mr. Kitten," says Portage, "I instruct you, as vice commissioner and deputy consul of this place, to demand of Captain Marion, of the sloop Christopher Columbus, whether he drives me to the act of putting this coat on." "Mr. Portage," says Captain Marion, looking out of his hammock again, "as I can hear what you say, I can answer it without troubling the gentleman. I should be sorry that you should be at the pains of putting on too hot a coat on my account, but, otherwise, you may put it on inside before, or inside out, or with your legs in the sleeves, or your head in the skirts, for any objection that I have to offer to your thoroughly pleasing yourself." "Very good, Captain Marion," says Portage, in a tremendous passion. "Very good, sir. Be the consequences on your own head. Mr. Kitten, as it has come to this, help me on with it. When he had given that order, he walked off in the coat, and all our names were taken, and I was afterwards told that Mr. Kitten wrote from his dictation more than a bushel of large paper on the subject, which cost more before it was done with than ever could be calculated, and which only got done with after all by being lost. Our work went on merrily, nevertheless, and the Christopher Columbus, hauled up, lay helpless on her side like a great fish out of water. While she was in that state, there was a feast, or a ball, or an entertainment, or more properly all three together, given us in honor of the ship, and the ship's company, and the other visitors. At that assembly, I believe, I saw all the inhabitants then upon the island, without any exception. I took no particular notice of more than a few, but I found it very agreeable in that little corner of the world to see the children, who were of all ages, and mostly very pretty as they mostly are. There was one handsome elderly lady, with very dark eyes and gray hair, that I inquired about. I was told that her name was Mrs. Venning, and her married daughter, a fair slight thing, was pointed out to me by the name of Fanny Fisher. Quite a child she looked, with a little copy of herself holding to her dress, and her husband, just come back from the mine, exceeding proud of her. They were a good-looking set of people on the whole, but I didn't like them. I was out of sorts. In conversation with Charker, I found fault with all of them. I said of Mrs. Venning, she was proud. Of Mrs. Fisher, she was a delicate little baby fool. What did I think of this one? Why, he was a fine gentleman. What did I say to that one? Why, she was a fine lady. What could you expect them to be, I asked Charker, nursed in that climate, with the tropical night shining for them, musical instruments playing to them, great trees bending over them, soft lamps lighting them, fireflies sparkling in among them, bright flowers and birds brought into existence to please their eyes, delicious drinks to be had for the pouring out, delicious fruits to be got for the picking, and everyone dancing and murmuring happily in the scented air, with the sea breaking low on the reef for a pleasant chorus. Fine gentlemen and fine ladies, Harry? I says to Charker. Yes, I think so. Dolls. Dolls. Not the sort of stuff for wear that comes of poor private soldiering in the Royal Marines. However, I could not gainsay that they were very hospitable people, and that they treated us uncommonly well. Every man of us was at the entertainment, and Mrs. Beltet had more partners than she could dance with, though she danced all night too. As to Jack, whether of the Christopher Columbus, or of the Pirate Pursuit Party, it made no difference. He danced with his brother Jack, danced with himself, danced with the moon, the stars, the trees, the prospect, anything. I didn't greatly take to the chief officer of that party, with his bright eyes, brown face, and easy figure. I didn't much like his way, when he first happened to come where we were, with Miss Marion on his arm. Oh, Captain Carton, she says, here are two friends of mine. He says, indeed? These two Marines? Meaning Charker and self. Yes, says she, I showed these two friends of mine when they first came, all the wonders of Silver Store. He gave us a laughing look, and says he, you are in luck, men. I would be disrated, and go before the mast tomorrow, to be shown the way upward again by such a guide. You are in luck, men. When we had saluted, and he and the lady had waltzed away, I said, you are a pretty fellow to talk of luck. You may go to the devil. Mr. Commissioner Portage and Mrs. Commissioner showed among the company on that occasion like the king and queen of a much greater Britain than Great Britain. Only two other circumstances in that jovial night made much separate impression on me. One was this. A man in our draft of Marines, named Tom Packer, a wild unsteady young fellow, but the son of a respectable shipwright in Portsmouth Yard, and a good scholar who had been well brought up, comes to me after a spell of dancing, and takes me aside by the elbow, and says, swearing angrily, Gil Davis, I hope I may not be the death of Sergeant Bruce one day. Now, I knew Bruce had always borne particularly hard on this man, and I knew this man to be of a very hot temper. So, I said, "Tut, nonsense. Don't talk so to me. If there's a man in the Corps who scorns the name of an assassin, that man and Tom Packer are one." Tom wipes his head, being in a mortal sweat, and says he, "I hope so, but I can't answer for myself, when he lords it over me, as he has just now done, before a woman. I tell you what, Gil, mark my words. It will go hard with Sergeant Bruce, if ever we are in an engagement together, and he has to look to me to save him. Let him say a prayer then, if he knows one, for it's all over with him, and he is on his deathbed. Mark my words." I did mark his words, and very soon afterwards too, as will shortly be taken down. The other circumstance that I noticed at that ball was the gaiety and attachment of Christian George King, the innocent spirits that Sambo Pilot was in, and the impossibility he found himself under of showing all the little colony, but especially the ladies and children, how fond he was of them, how devoted to them, and how faithful to them for life and death, for present, future, and everlasting, made a great impression on me. If ever a man, Sambo or no Sambo, was trustful and trusted, to what may be called quite an infantine and sweetly beautiful extent, surely, I thought that morning when I did at last lie down to rest, it was that Sambo Pilot, Christian George King. This may account for my dreaming of him. He stuck in my sleep, corner-wise, and I couldn't get him out. He was always flitting about me, dancing round me, and peeping in over my hammock, though I woke and dozed off again 50 times. At last, when I opened my eyes, there he really was, looking in at the open side of the little dark hut, which was made of leaves, and had Charker's hammock slung in it as well as mine. "So dear," says he, in a sort of a low croak. "Yup." "Hallo," says I, starting up. "What? You are there, are you?" "Is," says he. "Christian George King got news." "What news has he got?" "Pirates out." I was on my feet in a second. So was Charker. We were both aware that Captain Carton, in command of the boats, constantly watched the mainland for a secret signal, though, of course, it was not known to such as us what the signal was. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.